Would you like to experience a shift in your career? You may be frustrated to see the same workplace patterns repeat or feel that work lacks purpose, respect, or compensation. To get relief, you may have talked with friends or family, read books, watched YouTube, or taken courses. All good strategies. If you get unstuck quickly and move towards your goal. But if you're frustrated with your progress, you need an expert guide to become the hero of your own work story. And that's where I come in. My name is Marie Gervais, and I help people move from work trauma to career transformation. With a doctorate in culture and learning in the workplace, certification in emotional freedom coaching, and as a training and development professional, I've helped hundreds of stuck career professionals gain new insights and release what is not serving them. So if you're ready to turn wishful thinking into a meaningful, well-compensated career and are hungry to experience the power of coaching to get you there, let's talk. Get a taste of what career success could be for you. Go to trycoaching.link/biz. Biz is spelled B-I-S. See you there. Hello, Culture and Leadership Connections podcast listeners. I'm really happy to bring you today Margaret Adu, who is the CEO of Omego Lodges and was originally from Ghana, an architect with a master's in architecture. And in 1993, she moved to Edmonton in Canada, and then in 1997 to Calgary. She's the proud mother of Danielle, age 26, Debbie, 24, and Kobe, age 21. And she is the president and founder of Omega Lodges of Omega Group and the honorary consul for Ghana for Calgary and Southern Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. She has served as vice president and president of the Canadian Association of Calgary for many years and is the manager of operations for More to Life Homes. She has received many awards for service. One of them is the Canadian Achievement Award for Community Service, the Black and Gold Awards for Community and Business, the Obsidian Award for Business Leader of the Year. She's been nominees of many other awards. All of those will be in our show notes. I'm very excited to present to you Margaret. Margaret, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Marie. Thank you. I'm glad to be here too.
I am honored that you were able to take the time from your busy schedule to be a guest on the podcast. I wanted to tell the podcast listeners a little bit about how I met you. I was introduced to Margaret through a colleague who set up a meeting where we could speak to her about the work that she has done in Calgary to set up and run homes for seniors that are respectful and dignified and really livable. And this is a model that needs to be replicated everywhere because as people become less and less capable of taking care of themselves, they need humane and loving care, but the people who care for them need to be treated with a lot of care and respect too so that they want to stay and do this job, which is not that easy. And it has particular importance to me because my father has very severe Alzheimer's, is blind and almost totally deaf, and has recently fell several times and had broken bones. So I am certainly very interested in hearing what Margaret has to say about how she got those homes started and what a benefit they have been to seniors and to families. So Margaret, thank you for joining the podcast. And I'm wondering if you could start by sharing just a little bit about who you are, a little bit more of the personal things about who you are and what you do.
Okay, so my name is Margaret Mary Adu. My mom took the MAG of the Margaret and the MA of Mary. So most people call me Magma. Yes. So I'm known to my community by Magma and I'm known to the business world by Margaret. Yes, I do operate a Omega Lodges with a great team. I couldn't have done it alone without my team. So I applaud my team. And I think every successful leader or employer would always say that it's their team that has made them who they are, the team behind them. I do operate and manage 11 facilities called personal care homes. I do also manage More to Life, as Marie said. More to Life is also a personal care home. Personal care homes have 4 to 6 clients in each of them. And we do have a contract with our Better Health Services to provide 24/7 dignified care to some very loving individuals. Honestly, these are just like you and I. It could be your brother, your mother, your sister. They are 18 years to the age of 99 or 100. I do have seniors who are from the age of 65 above, and I do have young adults who are 27 years old. So the average age of the personal care home today has really changed and it's evolved from seniors alone, the average age of 45 to 50. So that's what I do in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
We do have some loving about 60 plus clients and about 30 plus caregivers who help with this.
But Margaret, when you came to Canada, you were an architect. And how did you end up in the personal care home business? Because that seems to be a very big jump.
Okay. Well, yes, I am an architect. And I came to Canada in the intention of working as an architect. I had that intention. But I was also introduced to home care. And whilst working as an architect in the day, I'll do home care in the evenings. And I met a lovely lady who was dementiated. Well, I took on this challenge when the family of the lady said to me, Margaret, we think you're a really good caregiver. And I was working through an agency at the time, but they said to me, we want you to manage our aunts. I was like, really? They go, yeah. I'm like, okay. So I took on the challenge. And that was when I opened Alpha Omega Group. And I hired three other girls to help me take care of this lovely lady. She was in Edmonton at the time. I noticed that when she lived in her home, she did really well. She did not digress. She progressed. We took her from a lady weighing 70 pounds to 90 pounds. It was just such a fulfilling, rewarding experience. So I said to myself, I'm going to open homes just like Dorothy's home, and I'm going to take care of seniors. Dorothy lived really well in her home. So one day she was forced to go to an institutionalized care facility, and Dorothy died in 2 weeks. Yeah. Dorothy was miserable. Mm-hmm. So that was when I said, this is my calling. If I was able to take care of Dorothy in her house, she did so well, it means everybody is going to do well. When the facility has a home-like environment, I always say, well, you can smell the bacon when it's cooking. Mm-hmm. That's what I always say. Mm-hmm. You faster. You're part of that home. So that was the beginning of A Omega Lodges.
That's really a lovely story. Like I said, I have quite a personal connection to this because of the experiences with my father. And when he broke a hip and a shoulder and was in the hospital for 3 months, he lost 80 pounds. And he wasn't fat to begin with. He became depressed. The food was horrible. The care was terrible. And he's now in a different place. And it's certainly not what I would describe as a place where you can smell the baking and the cooking. But it's a mm-hmm. lot better because the people that work there show so much care and affection for the people that they're taking care of. And I haven't seen him pick up like this in 4 years. And it's because he's treated like a human being.
Exactly. Yeah. The caregivers make a big difference. Mm-hmm. Honestly. Mm-hmm. Honestly. I applaud my caregivers every day.
Mm-hmm. So when you were younger, when you were a child, did you have a lot of association with older people? Did you grow up in an extended family?
Exactly. So my grandmother came to live with us because she was non-ambulatory with diabetes. And she lived with us. But when I was growing up back home, we never had facilities. Now it's becoming a thing in Ghana. But back home, your mother came to live with you. Grandma comes to live with you. And you take care of grandma. So that's all I knew, you know. So my grandma lived with us and she died in the house. She's died peacefully in her sleep. And I remember always going to her room to listen to stories and care for her as much as I could. I remember that so well. Mm. You know, so coming here and meeting Dorothy, Dorothy was like my grandma to me. Mm-hmm. You know, she one day she said to me, where did you come from? And what color are you? And I said, Dorothy, I'm black. She goes, you're not black, you're dark brown. That's so cute. She trusted me so much. Dorothy was an alcoholic and she smoked like crazy, but Dorothy quit smoking because of me. She quit drinking. She started eating.
That's what love does.
That's what love does. I know.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about your childhood. What other things, memories do you have that you think made you into the person you are today?
Well, my biological mom died when I was 4. I grew up living with my aunt. I've known her as my mother ever since. Honestly, she told me my mother had passed when I was around 11 because I knew I had a mother and I knew that she had left home but never came back. But they told me that my mother had gone abroad. Back home, they don't tell you that your parents passed. Like here, they quickly tell you that, oh, mom and dad went to heaven. No. They told me she had gone abroad. So I always was waiting for her. You know, so honestly, I wasn't really pampered as a child. I was a daughter. I was the only girl of 3 brothers and my aunt had 4 sons. So then I became the only daughter of 7 brothers. So I wasn't really pampered, and I was the first of all of them.
You probably had all the responsibility and none of the freedom.
Exactly. So if you're a woman back home, a little girl, remember what that means. You do all the chores.
Yep.
So I think it thickened my skin. And I had to fight my way with the boys. You know, I had to be a tomboy growing up because I had only brothers.
You had to learn to stake your claim or get trampled.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you probably had to take charge of things too, you know, because you were the one that
all
was
the time
running everything. So you'd say, listen, you're doing it my way. I'm just imagining.
It's true. And you know, growing up here, you have a lot of freedom as a child to express yourself to your parents. Now it's changing back home. But growing up, you didn't have a chance to express yourself. If mom said, shut up, it was shut up. If mom said, sit, it was sit. You couldn't tell mom anything other than you just listen to what mom or dad said. So looking back, I evolved into who I am today because I came into an environment that could allow me to be me.
Mm-hmm.
But I had all that in me then, because even though it was that way, there were times that I was rebellious. That is how come my aunt told me my mom had died.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was quite that rebellious child and I wouldn't do certain things she said I should do. So I'd fight back and I'd be like, I'm going to my mom. Where's my mom? I just want to go to my mom. So one day she had to tell me that you're stuck with me. And that was a turning point for me. I was like, oh my God, I'm stuck here. I better get things going.
That was an important turning point for you. That's when you realized no one was going to come to take you away from that context.
Exactly.
Well, you probably learned a lot of grit. You learned a lot of skills that your brothers likely did not learn because they had more freedom and no responsibility or a lot less than you. So you learned a lot of skills and you learned to make the best of what you had.
I did. But my 3 biological brothers, they lived with my dad and they had no mom. So they are also thick skinned.
Mm-hmm.
They had to do a lot for themselves at a very young age, mm-hmm. honestly. Yeah, mm-hmm. We have a story. We are a strong family.
You are.
We had to do a lot. I do applaud my brothers. We lost our last brother, you know, but I have 2. We're 3 of them, and then we lost the last baby and about 6 years ago. But the 2 of them, they've come a long way considering that they had no mother. But I had my aunt, who's my mother now, and her husband.
Mm-hmm.
But being the only girl with her 4 sons was a different story. I had to fight with the boys for my place, you know?
Yes,
I had to
I'm
play
sure.
with them and ride the bikes with them and do, but I had to do my chores because I was a daughter. But it's made me who I am.
Mm-hmm.
No 2 ways. It's made me who I am. And I'm thankful for all that. I'm thankful for that experience I went through.
So what about in your teens or maybe as a young adult, what memory stands out for you? Like you said that you learned to be yourself and to be able to speak your own voice and to do things your own way. Is there a memory that's associated with that?
Well, I end up going to a boarding school because back home, we all went to boarding schools at grade 7 up.
Yeah.
And so and I went to an all-girls school. It was a Catholic school with a very strict principle. We call them headmistress.
Right.
Yeah. So that was when I evolved. I mean, I had the freedom to do a lot of things. Although we had rules and regulations, it was fun to be home. You know, it was fun to be out there to explore with other girls and do my own thing within the school. You know, I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that is where I realized that I am very athletic and was very athletic then. So I was a sports prefect. And that was when they realized that these leadership skills were really in me, you know, and I'll take forefront and let things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's great.
That was great. Yeah.
So the groups that you're born into, I mean, you're born into Ghana, you're born into a different culture, probably different tribes and a region. And then you moved to a city, I think the capital city, Accra, which would be a city environment. Things that would have been around you, it was probably a religious environment, a language environment, a social class. So what would you say has affected you or that you're aware of now? Probably at the time you weren't, but you're aware of now that's affected who you are from the groups that you were born into.
I think family, because growing up with my mom and her husband, my aunt and her husband had their own business. So dad would always say, you should strive to be your own leader. You should strive to own your own business. Even if you didn't make any profit, it was a shock absorber. Mm-hmm. You know, you should always not work for somebody. Be your own person. And I used to hear that over and over and over again.
I was just going to ask you if you think that has anything to do with also being Ghanaian, because I have met so many amazing Ghanaian business people. Ghana, Nigeria, and Lebanon. They're like business wizards. And especially the women in Ghana.
It's also your region. Ghana, they always say a certain group of people, business-minded, a certain group is all academics, but they are not assertive. So it's always, and it's true. So if you meet most Ghanaian businessmen and women, they usually come from a certain region. It could be from the Ashanti region or the Eastern region. If you meet people who are so academic and they are professors and lecturers, they could come from the Kyapim region or the Fanti region. So I guess it's, for me, I came from that region where we are entrepreneurs and leaders and we want to do stuff and very assertive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And risk takers. We were not scared to take risks.
That's great. Yeah. So then what about groups that you joined later as you grew up? Because I mean, there's architecture. That's a group. There are people that are involved with home care. That's a group. And then there's the Ghanaian Association in Calgary that you belong to for a long time. That it's going to be different from Ghanaians Ghana because it's got a Calgary context to it. What groups would you say have influenced you that you've grown into or joined later on in life?
Okay, so in architecture, I went to school in Ghana, right? And the School of Architecture was so elite. And before you were admitted into that faculty, oh my goodness. So that group alone, you felt like you were up there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You felt different, yeah. And then, of course, coming here, the group that I came into here, because at the time, my husband was doing his PhD at U of A. That's how come I came to Edmonton. And the group I met were all academics. You know, they were in U of A. It's all about book. But they were not entrepreneuring, but more into their studies. And the Ghanaian group I came to meet to were mostly all here because of academics. I came here not because I was coming to look for greener pastures. I came because my husband was here. And my intention was to go back home right away. My intention, because I was doing very well back home. I finished architecture. I was working in a really good company. I was doing so much. I'd put my stamp on a lot of developments. So my family never thought I'd live in Canada till now. It was a big shock. So the idea was I was going to go back. That, I guess, if you grow up in that niche, you have a certain taste in life and you want to work hard to continue it. Because people around you are entrepreneurs, they're educated. So they are professional. Everybody around me was educated, professional, entrepreneurs. That is how I grew up. So I wanted to maintain that with humility. It did not change who I was because I didn't grow up being pampered. So that's the humility aspect of it. And then arriving here was a game changer because here I come and I come from this family background, this educational background. Everybody around me is quite elite. And I'm thinking, I'm going straight to do architecture. Then I get hit right away. It's like, no, it doesn't happen that way. Then I realized I wasn't in Ghana. I was in Canada. And there was a lot more than just being an architect. Thank God for my humility. It didn't change who I was, you know. So I was like, okay, this is a different ballgame here. Okay, what am I going to do? And I wanted to work as an architect. That's all I wanted. And I did really well at school, you know, and I was known in Ghana as a good architect, young architect, you know. So then I made lots of phone calls to lots of architecture companies. They were like, no, 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 no.
Yeah, that's a story of so many professionals that immigrate to Canada, mm-hmm. where the doors just keep closing in your face.
But I walked into, so that confident part of me that was curtailed when I was growing up, I mean, that was suppressed, it was still there. So being here, I walked straight into a company, an architecture company that was really close to the apartment where we lived. And I bolted in and I said, I called Joe. He said he didn't have a job, but I want to work regardless. And he goes, we don't have a job. I said, I don't care. I'm not going. I want a job.
I'm not leaving till you hire me.
I said, I'm not leaving. He says, no, we don't. And then I said, I have a portfolio. Do you want to look at my portfolio? He goes, okay. He was a nice guy, nice Caucasian guy. And he looked at it. He says, oh, you went to this school. This school is the best in the Commonwealth in Africa. I know about this school, blah, blah, blah. I said, now you know. So will you hire me? He goes, no. And I said, well, I'll work for free. He goes, you work for free? I said, yeah. He goes, why? I said, well, I'm black and I'm a woman. I don't have any Canadian experience and I speak differently. You'd say I have an accent, but I speak the Queen's English anyway.
That's right.
And I have a gap in my teeth. I don't look like any of you. So I'll work for free. I just want to do it. He goes, oh, okay, that's your table. So he made me work for free. But it didn't take long and I turned the tables. So I didn't go to work one day. He goes, Margaret, you're not at work. The job has to go to Japan. I'm like, hey, you don't pay me, honey. I'm sleeping in today. So that is when I got paid.
You made yourself indispensable. And then when he realized he couldn't do anything without you, he said, it's time for this woman to get her proper salary.
Exactly. That's my story. So it humbled me. Thank God I had humility. So I've done so many. You know something? I worked there. I've worked in home care because that's how come I went into health. Meeting Dorothy humbled me. And then I remember when I got pregnant with Danielle, I told the architecture company I was quitting. I've had a baby and I can't do daycare. These are all miracle babies. This is a miracle baby. I can't do daycare. And my boss was like, oh, Margaret, you can't leave. And I'm like, I got to leave. You know, so I did leave. And it wasn't long before my husband then got a job in Calgary. So we had to move to Calgary. I remember my boss like said to me, Margaret, you're going to go far. I haven't met any woman as persuasive and persistent as you. You mm-hmm. never gave up. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to give you a reference that time. When you go to Calgary, go to any architecture company and you get a job. And I did get a job. And then within hours, I turned it down because I realized that I didn't want to do daycare with my daughter. But I knew that because of the success story with Dorothy, I wanted to open a home. Mm-hmm. I knew that. I went home care at night while my husband went in the day. And I took care of the child in the day and went to work at night. I've worked in warehouses. I've done everything. I'm an architect with a master's. I didn't care. I had a dream. And the dream was I needed money to get a home to start this business.
To get this business going where seniors would be treated with that same kind of care.
With dignity.
And dignity, yes.
To be in a home-like environment that don't feel love, don't make new families.
So, Margaret, would you say this determination that you talk about, that's something that's a quality that you were born with?
Yes.
You think it's part of your temperament to be that determined?
It's part of my temperament. Mm-hmm. No two ways. It's in all of us. Yeah. It's in all my brothers. And I think we got it from our mother, who passed away very early in life, in her 30s. Because my father was a very calm and collected. He was a civil servant. He wasn't the one who's going to go chase for his own business. No, he was okay working as a civil servant, working with the ministry. But my mother opened the school. She was assertive. So I think the four of us got it from my mom. That's what my dad tells us.
Yeah. Well, maybe you got the calmness and the determination from both.
I'm not as calm. I can be, though. I can be an introvert and an extrovert.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're probably right on that dividing line between introvert and extrovert. You can be both. You can be either.
Yes.
I often tell people that there can be social introverts as well, just like there can mm-hmm. be antisocial extroverts. So if you're a social introvert, for example, I have a grandson who's a social introvert. He's very much gets energy yes. from being alone and doing his own projects, but he enjoys people. He just doesn't like to be in a big yes. group of strangers.
I get that.
So what would you say you've added on to your personality as you got older and had to overcome obstacles and grow on to your personality?
What I added on was my gender and ethnicity. I came to embrace my gender more. I was mm-hmm. proud to be a woman because I remember when I arrived, And I opened the company first in Edmonton. I said to my husband at the time, I said, we are shoveling Dorothy's snow. So why can't we shovel the neighborhood? Everybody living here is a senior. They can't shovel their own. They can't shovel their snow. So I said, make some flyers and we'll send it around. So before we knew, we had calls coming to shovel snow. But then I wasn't brave enough to put my voice and my accent on my answering machine. And I regret it today. Because at the time, now every five people you see, you might see two people of different ethnicity. Those days, you could count us. Nobody came out who looked like me.
Right.
Everybody looked like you. It was only summer I saw one or two. I'm like, oh my goodness. We need more chocolate to make some vanilla, you know?
We sure do.
But now there's a lot more. You know, so I was a bit skeptical. I'm like, if they hear this voice, and I have a deep voice, and most people think, I mean, especially people think it's a man on the phone. Especially in the mornings when I answer the phone, I go, hello, I go, hi, sir. I'm like, no, it's a woman. Oh, sorry, sorry. I'm like, oh, I'm used to it. I have a deep voice, you know, so.
So you came into your own.
Came into my own, Marie, and I made this lady put the message on the answer machine, and now I wouldn't do that. I came into my own. I realized that this was who I was, and I have always advised, embrace you. Embrace who you are, and don't try to be like anybody, because you are you, and you are destined to be you. So I evolved into that woman that was proud of my color, proud of my gap, proud of my voice, proud of who I was, proud of the way I speak, proud of everything that I have. I mean, I was just beyond proud. It made me more confident. And I've definitely met a lot of obstacles by being me, but it's okay. But at the end of the day, it's me.
Yeah.
And I've embraced me. So I've always advised, embrace your you. And it's only when you embrace your you will you achieve the unthinkable. Because the minute you embrace you, the sky is the limit. You are proud of who you are, so you can break barriers and do whatever you want, basically. Mm-hmm.
You know, what you just said reminds me of Sabra Sully that I interviewed a few podcasts back, and she was born to Indian and Malawian parents. And so she moved to a school in India and she did East Indian dance, but she looked more Black than East Indian, and her hair looks definitely like African hair, not like Indian hair. And they sent home all these instructions to the girls for what they should do for their hair for the upcoming dance performance. And she went home and she just cried because she told her mother, I can't make my hair do that. And what I'm going to do. And her mother said, you just go with your hair the way it is because it's you. And that's the best you can be, is the you actually are. And nobody's going to complain about your hair. They're going to wish they had hair like you. And she said that was her first lesson. And no matter what other people think, it doesn't matter. I'm going to be who I am. I think she was 14, which is such a tender age, right?
Yeah.
So what about the time you felt that you had a kind of culture shock where you went, you know what is normal for me is not normal for these people here. Can you recall an incident, one of many, I'm sure, but can you recall one that you could share?
Yeah, one is having to call to visits and make time for visiting. That was a shock. We just come in and say, hi, we don't have to call. We just go, I'm going to see Marie. We just walk it, knock on her door. Hi, Marie, how are you? But here it's like, no, you just can't come. It's dinner time. Just can't come. Give me time. And I was like, oh, okay. And my children have picked it up too. I'm like, guys, I'm just going to come into your homes wherever you marry. Okay. I'm not going to be calling you and you giving me time to come and visit you. Mom's going to come visit, because I thought for me, it's normal, but it's not normal.
Yeah.
And then one thing I found too was to tell my, for instance, where I come from, it's not into food shame. An example, you got pregnant. Mm-hmm. These guys, they get pregnant 3 weeks, they're telling everybody, it's on Facebook, it's I got pregnant. No. We don't say anything. We wait till we've passed like 7 months and then we tell.
Yeah.
Or you are starting a new venture of some sort. You don't go telling the whole world. You wait. So I find it really, people are so open here. Like so open, I guess, you know, so those are the two things that came to mind.
People are open with their health, with the stages in life, with their difficulties that they're going through, but they're not open with you coming into their homes.
No, exactly. You got that right.
It's completely the opposite of what you were used to when you were growing up.
Exactly. Got that right, Barry. Thank you. Oh my goodness.
So we're getting close to the end of the interview. I was going to ask you, what brings out the best in Margaret? So if people are working with you and they want to get the best out of working with you, what makes you feel at your most me self?
Okay, I'm a generous person. And sometimes I don't think, I just give. And that's what people remember me for, you know. And I'm very approachable. But they also know that Margaret doesn't take no easy for an answer. Mm. And Margaret would, for instance, if I gave you a position or a responsibility, like, I can do it, boss. I'm like, you can. Never say no to yourself. Have you tried? You can't.
Right.
So then they know me for making leaders out of people and bringing the best out of anybody. Mm-hmm. Because I believe we all have so much to give and we all have strengths. So my staff would tell you, she's brought the best out of me that I didn't know I had. She saw something in me that has made me who I am. She never gave up on me because she knew I could do it. You know, so that's what I guess a lot know me for. And I do accept anybody for who they are. I embrace every diversity. I embrace all. And I'm not judgmental. And I always advise, it could be you. So never judge and never maltreat anybody. Treat people with dignity and respect. Because
that's true.
You never know when the tables will turn.
Exactly. And they will.
Yeah, and they will. Yeah.
They will. I have a cousin in Germany who is doing a study on public transport and disabilities. And he said to me something that I'm not going to forget. He said, everybody is disabled at some point in their life.
Yeah.
They either break a leg, like I'm disabled right now because I fell off a counter and wrecked my tore a ligament in my legs. Mm-hmm. That makes me disabled, right? You know, like
Exactly. Everybody
is disabled at some point in their life, and some people are disabled for their entire lives. So making a multi-ability friendly environment benefits everyone. And it just really struck me. I think that's kind of what you're trying to do too.
Exactly. Exactly. Let's respect everybody.
Yeah, make their life experience at home and at work a dignified and family embracing type experience.
You know, a friend of mine has a Down syndrome and daughter, and she had a fundraising for Special Olympics. And she didn't term it as disabled. She termed it differently abled individuals.
Mm-hmm.
That was beautiful when I read it.
Mm-hmm.
Differently abled. Everybody's able differently.
Yeah. Everybody has different abilities.
Different abilities. So mm-hmm. they are able to, but it's a different type of ability, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying that the daughter is disabled. No, she's able in her capability. She's able.
In her own way.
In her own way.
Maybe that would also bring out the best in you, is if people allow you to be who you are and show your abilities in the way that you show them without trying to box you in.
They know me. They honestly, it's so true. And they allow me to be who I am. I'll give you one last story. So then we had a management meeting and I had given this staff member a senior position of some sort. And she didn't even do it for a month. She says, oh, boss, I am quitting. And like, you can't quit. You're not quitting. But you just like so-and-so who said they were quitting. And look at them. So as we were having the meeting, she was there. And then my immediate assistant said to her, you have me and you have blah, 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 blah. We are all here. We can guide you. When I came on, it was just Margaret. The business has grown so much that Margaret has been able to have all of us. But when Margaret hired me, it was only Margaret. And I had only Margaret to look up to. And you know what Margaret did with me? And I never knew I did that. She said, I was driving with Margaret and I said I didn't know something or I couldn't do something. And Margaret says, why are you saying you can't do it? You have to know it. And I was like, I said that. She says, Margaret, I wanted to cry so bad in the car with you because you said you can't say no. You don't know it. You said that to me, Margaret. And I said, well, now look at you.
You told her she couldn't say no, and now she's in a senior position.
Exactly. And she was telling this other lady, says, you know what? I had just Margaret telling me, you can't say no. You can't say you don't know. It was just Margaret. But you have asked to help you. So you come to me and I can guide you.
Mm-hmm.
It's no longer just Margaret. You know, So she's a senior position now. So I guess I did something good, although, and she allowed me to be me, although for her, she said she wanted to cry because she thought she couldn't do it. She thought I was being harsh by saying that. She's, oh my gosh. Yeah. But she's grateful.
Yeah. In hindsight, people are grateful. In the moment, they typically are not. But when they look back, they go, yep, I needed that, and I'm glad it happened.
Exactly.
So is there something you would like to promote before we end?
I wish that there'll be more facilities, honestly. Our residents could smell the bacon, could hear the clutter in the kitchen, and that financial institutions will look at this and help us put up some of these structures and not always go according to the numbers they see in the box. But some of them will look outside the box and see how they can help operators and people with visions and dreams make this a reality. Because I think we need to change the face of caregiving or healthcare in Canada. We need to make them more home-like. We need to make these clients smell the bacon and hear the clutter. Because it's more healing than anything. It's more healing than medicine.
It is.
It's more healing than medicine. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it in the facilities that we operate. I have seen it, honestly.
And it is cost effective. You know, a home environment for my dad would have meant that, well, he still needed around the clock care, but having that in a home environment would have meant that he didn't fall. He wasn't in the hospital. He didn't break bones.
Exactly.
He didn't have to be a burden on the healthcare system for 3 months. And all of those things are costly. And none of those things would have happened had he been in a home like one of the ones that you have. When people say, look at the cost, they're only looking at a fraction of what the cost is. The immediate cost in front of their noses, they're not looking at the entire cost of neglecting a human being. When a human being is neglected, the cost to society is huge.
Exactly. And I always tell everybody, it could be me, it could be you. They didn't choose to be brain injured. They didn't choose to be mentally sick. They didn't choose to be able differently. They got up one day, they were in a car accident, they were brain injured. And they were as young as 20 or as young as 27. They grew up in an environment that they had no mom and dad. They had to choose between drugs and school. They had to choose between living on the streets. It wasn't their fault. So it could be you and me. So let's work together.
Yeah.
And let's create some humane facilities for differently abled individuals.
Mm-hmm. Such an important message. Anything else you'd like to say in closing?
Thank you, Marie. Thank you for the opportunity, honestly. For me, pouring my heart on your podcasts, you know, this is very dear to me. I'm very passionate when I talk about these things and what we do. And I also want to thank my team, you know. If ever they get to hear this, without them, we are nothing. I thank the residents for even allowing us to take care of them because they bring the best in us. And I do thank my team. I thank AHS for having this program and giving us this contract and the many other operators who are doing the same thing. So thank you, Marie, for exposing us positively to the world.
It's an honor. Have a wonderful rest of the day.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Margaret Addo grew up as the only girl in a blended family of 7 brothers, learning early on how to take care of people, take charge, and take responsibility to learn what she needed to know to do the job. From one of the top young architects in Ghana to the founder of Omega Lodges in Calgary, where people with different abilities can live in a loving, dignified home environment, Margaret has made a mark for herself everywhere she lives. The lists of service awards and recognitions of excellence Margaret has been added to are too long to add to this closing comment, but they will never match Margaret's big heart and all-encompassing generosity of spirit that sees people for who they truly are and through humility brings out the best in them. I hope you were inspired by Margaret and her story and that you will pass it on to others who could benefit from listening to it. Remember to go to lovethepodcast.com/culture-and-leadership using the and sign to rate and review so we can reach our goal of 1,000 downloads per episode. It's easy. As soon as you go to lovethepodcast.com/culture-and-leadership on your phone, whatever is available for you to rate and review will pop up. So you can do it without any difficulty. So take the time to go do that now and help us reach our goal. Thank you for listening, and may culture and leadership connections continue to guide and inspire your day. Want to show some appreciation? You can buy me a coffee. What? How do you buy a coffee for a podcast owner? Well, there's a way. Let me explain. You go to buymeacoffee.com/Marie Gervais. That's spelled M-A-R-I-E-G-E-R-V-A-I-S. So it's buymeacoffee.com/Marie Gervais. And when you go to that website, what's going to happen is you'll get a chance to click on 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 cups of coffee at $5 a piece to help contribute to the cost of the podcast. And yes, it's $5 for a cup of coffee because it's quality coffee for a quality podcast. So I hope you will contribute and you'll help us to reduce the costs of the podcast by going to buymeacoffee.com/Marie Gervais. Thank you in advance for your generous contribution.